Chapter 23. It was a beautiful day for an imperial coronation, but then this was Xi'an, and every day was a beautiful day there. As the morning of the coronation broke, artificially, but even so, there was a large crowd of onlookers and well-wishers outside Xi'an Cathedral. They clustered around the areas below the balcony where the Emperor Nadashe would, after her coronation, appear to her new subjects to wave and beam and take her first public steps in her new role. If any of the spectators had any concern that the bombing that had happened at the last coronation would repeat itself, they kept it to themselves. Well, mostly they kept it to themselves. There were a few wits who suggested that an explosion would be unlikely this time because Nadashe wasn't a suicide bomber. These wits were then mostly told to stop acting like assholes, which made the wits complain that no one could take a joke anymore. Other, more serious students of imperial history noted the same thing as the wits, cast somewhat differently. No one denied that the Nohamapeitan family, once favored by the imperial house, had in the last few years done a heel turn in its relationship to the Wu family, predicated mostly by a sense of grievance that Greyland II, the former emperor, would not marry a Nohamapeitan as previously agreed, and many observers asked whether the Nohamapeitan response of attempted assassination and coup was not, in fact, within bounds when dynasties were on the line. Or, more succinctly, was anything really off-limits to the royals? Still, others noted that these spirited and increasingly abstruse discussions of the prerogative of noble houses served the purpose of abstracting the actual crimes of the Nohamapeitan family, and of Nadashe herself, let's not forget, to such an extent that they stopped being considered crimes and started becoming colorful backstory. This in itself added even more layers of abstraction to conversation. What made the discussion ultimately irrelevant was that the Wu family, the imperial family, had been the ones to offer this compromise, to honor the deal made by Ottavio VI and broken by Greyland II, and that the other noble families had fallen so quickly into line. The ascendance of Nadashe Nohamapeitan was not a trick or a coup, informed observers noted. It was a carefully negotiated peace treaty. There had been nothing like it in the history of the interdependency, and that in itself was exciting. And in being exciting was good. There had been some hiccups on the way to the coronation, of course. Archbishop Corbain's sudden resignation had ground things to a halt while a selection of the new archbishop was made. And that selection process both took far longer than anyone expected and resulted in a compromise archbishop that no one was particularly happy with. Apparently, not least of all, including Archbishop Cole himself. Nadashe, at least, did not let the time go unmarked. With these interstitial weeks prior to the coronation, the incoming emperor launched a charm offensive with a series of carefully managed presentations, appearances, and interviews designed to show her softer and more compassionate side. In the interviews in particular, Nadashe did not shy away from the controversies surrounding her selection or the troubling recent actions undertaken in the name of the House of Nohamapeitan, but gently guided everything toward the promises of the future as all the noble houses worked together in harmony to deal with the flow crisis for the benefit of all the citizens of the interdependency. For a number of these interviews, Nadashe was accompanied by her new fiancé, Yuva Wu, a nice-looking young man who looked slightly dazed most of the time and who answered most questions with politely meandering answers that went nowhere. The couple sure looked great in pictures, however, and Nadashe was happy to speak glowingly about their future together and the children they would have, probably soon so as to avoid any problems with succession in the future. Not everyone was taken in by this publicity push, but everyone, from the highest of nobles to the lowest of hoi polloi, felt the fatigue of years of violent palace intrigue. Nadashe Nohamapeitan might have entire rolling carts worth of reputational baggage to her name, but once she was installed, everyone could simply stop thinking about all this nonsense. Greyland II, weird, strange, unexpected Greyland II, she of the religious visions and the grandstanding proclamations as she was arresting half of the nobles in the system, had been liked, and it was a good bet that history would love her. She was quirky enough for that, but as a practical matter, she and her rule were tiring. She was hard to wrap one's head around. Nadashe Nohamapeitan, now that was someone who really held no surprises. She was standard issue grasping Noble front to back and smart enough to try to hide it with a little bit of public relations. The interdependency had been here before with so many of its emperors, and that was, strangely enough, restful. Nadashi Nohama Peten herself could not give a good goddamn at this point if she was restful or contentious or smoothly charming or whatever. She just wanted this coronation done and over with. Archbishop Corbain's retirement and the attendant nonsense that followed with the selection of a new archbishop had really messed with Nadashi's schedule, and Prosper Wu had demanded that Nadashi take the interim to work on her image. Personally, Nadashi had found the image rehabilitation exercises maddening. She understood their need and grudgingly accepted that Prosper Wu was right, that they made the people more comfortable with her. But fundamentally, Nadashi didn't care if the people liked her. She wasn't planning to be an emperor of the people. This emperor was relocating the interdependency wholesale, and most of the people wouldn't be coming. So sitting there for endless rounds of interviews trying to look engaged and empathetic was just a waste of her time. This was especially the case when she was required to spend any time with Yuva Wu, Proster's pretty but aggravatingly dim-witted nephew, whom Nadashi was already planning to rid herself of at the earliest possible convenience after a child was born. Nadashi had already tried Yuva Wu out in bed to see what he was like. The answer was simple. At least he was quick about it. All of the lead-up to the coronation had been a waste of Nadashi's time. The only thing she had truly enjoyed was zip-tying Kiva Lagos to a fucking chair and watching the woman spit attitude for several minutes. Kiva had been correct that Nadashi had no intention of honoring the deal, although Nadashi had to admit she found it aggravating that Kiva had seen through it so quickly and had played with her as much as she was playing with Kiva. Kiva had always been too smart for her own good. Nadashi decided that one of her first acts as emperor would be to solve the problem of Kiva. She was troublesome. Nadashi was aware that there had been a riot at the Emperor Hane II's secured correctional facility, where some inmates had been injured and a few others went missing and were presumed dead. She decided there should be another riot there in the near future, with more definite casualties. The good news was, all of the waiting was behind her now. All the vapid interviews, all the enervating discussion of royal politics, all the dealing with the increasingly demanding Prosper Wu on this or that point, all of the shit, all of it, would be a thing of the past very soon now. All she had to do was bow, kneel, say a few words, and it was done. The ceremony was to be short, very short, because Nadashi had agreed not to take on the various lesser titles that would go to Yuva first, and then to their child once it was born and Yuva could be shuffled off. Yuva would have his own, smaller ceremony later in the week. Archbishop Cole, likewise, would become Cardinal Cole at a different ceremony, which Nadashi had no plan to attend. Enter the cathedral, kneel for 15 minutes, say a few words, rise an emperor. And then, finally, real work could be done. Then, it would truly be a beautiful day for Nadashi Nohama Peten. They had almost gotten through the ceremony, almost gotten to the point where she would be, in fact, Emperor Nadashi I, when the ghost appeared. Nadashi heard the mutterings and two loud whispers before she saw the ghost. She had been kneeling, knees on the marble, eyes tracing one of the veins in the stone, when the whispering began, immediately followed by the sound of Archbishop Cole, no longer uttering in his entirely grating monotone the words of the coronation rite. It was the hitch in Cole's speech that finally made Nadashi look up, to see Cole looking directly behind her with an expression of confusion. She followed his gaze and finally saw the ghost of Greyland II. Her first thought was, someone's getting fired. From her point of view, looking up at Greyland, Nadashi could see the projectors firing beams of light down to build the image of the former emperor directly behind where she was kneeling. Either someone had accidentally projected an image of Greyland, which was a fireable offense, or they were doing it intentionally as a prank or statement, which was not only fireable, but possibly ejectable. Nadashi would not object to the prankster sucking vacuum for a few very painful seconds before death came for them. Her second thought was, she's looking right at me. And indeed, she was. The projection of Greyland II was staring not only at Nadashe, but directly into her eyes. It was eerie as hell. Then the projection spoke. Hello, Nadashe, it said. Nice day for a coronation. The muttering of the crowd became louder. When Greyland spoke, Nadashe heard it projected directly at her, but she knew it was also being projected to the entire cathedral. The sound person is getting fired too, Nadashe thought. This isn't amusing, Nadashe finally said. I'm not here to be amusing, the projection said. I'm here for a coronation. You're not you, Nadashe said. I'm not who? You're not Greyland. You're someone playing a prank with a projected image and a voice simulator. You're sure of that? Of course I'm sure. Greyland is dead. Yes, agreed the projection. I am dead. You should know. You're the one who killed me. The murmurs became shouts at that. The Countess Raphaelia killed Greyland, Nadashe said, turning to the ghost. She brought the bomb that killed me into the palace, yes, the apparition said. But you were the one who gave it to her. You told her it was a listening device. You didn't tell her what it would really do. You didn't tell her that she was going to die along with me. Over the speakers of the cathedral came two voices. One, Nadashe, and the other, Countess Raphaelia Mazin Persaud, discussing the music box. The Countess was expressing concern that the listening device would be discovered. Nadashe replied that it was designed to appear perfectly innocent, and that as a backup, she had paid an Imperial security guard to alter one of the scanners by a software upgrade. Nadashe named the guard specifically so that the Countess should go to him directly for service. The audio cut off. Nadashe stared at Greyland, stunned. Greyland smiled. You shouldn't talk treason in front of a tablet microphone, Nadashe. It's not true, Nadashe whispered. The cathedral was alive with the sound of phone and tablet alerts going off. The full audio transcript of your conversation from your tablet, Nadashe, Greyland said, another set of pings. The audio transcript from the Countess's tablet, more pings. The testimony of the bomb maker you paid for the bomb. More pings. The testimony of the security guard you paid to compromise the scanner and to deal with the Countess. The cathedral echoed with the pings. Greyland smiled again at Nadashe. All of that just went to every tablet and personal device on Xian, by the way. And of course, all of this, Greyland indicated the coronation ceremony, is being broadcast live here on Xian and on Hub. Nadashe gaped. Members of the cathedral congregation began to get up and head to the exits. Greyland turned to face them. Sit down, she said, and her voice boomed through the sound system. All of you, we're not done here. Now, be quiet. Listen. The congregation quieted. In the silence, a high whistling came from air vents. The designer of this cathedral worried that fire would damage it, Greyland said. He made it so the air in the cathedral could be emptied into space in less than 2 minutes. If you want to test this proposition, try to leave before I am done speaking. There was dead silence, save for the whistling. Then the whistling stopped. Thank you, Greyland said. Now, you think I have come to expose Nadashe Nohamapitan as a murderer and traitor. So I have. But some of you in the congregation already knew she was a murderer and traitor. You knew she planned to murder me and take the role of emperor. You knew because she told you. You knew because she enlisted you into the scheme. The ping started rolling through the cathedral again. You paid 20 million marks each to join her coup. You paid it up front from your personal accounts. You paid it because she promised you that if you did, when the flow finally collapsed, you would be saved. You. You and your friends. You and your business. You and your house. Not the millions of people who you rule over and who live in your systems. They were to be left behind, in slowly dying habitats and underground cities, while you migrated to the only planet that could support life. You willingly and intentionally planned to condemn billions to death. I have all the details and documentation for each of you, every family, and every noble who signed on to this plan of death. and now so does everyone else. Greyland waited until the shouting died down again. I am dead. Nadashe Nohamapitan killed me. She murdered me as she murdered the Countess Rafelia and Drusen Wolf and her brother Amit and my dearest friend Nafa Dolg. I am dead, and I am no longer your emperor. I have become something else. Now I am something who knows the secrets of all the noble families. I am something who can control access to flow streams, not just here, but everywhere in the interdependency. I am something who can decide who will live and who will die in the coming years, and in the decades and even centuries ahead. This is what I have to say to you noble families assembled here today. None of you here today will go to end before the last of your citizens go to end. You will not abandon them. Their fate is your fate. You can try to abandon them if you like, but your ships will not move. Flow shoal sentries will not let you pass, and when you return home, they will know you tried to leave them behind. If you want to buy your way into end, the price of your admission is every other person in your system first. The interdependency is its people. We can, and we will, move everyone to the end system. But it will take not just years, but decades and even centuries. I will be here. Always I will be here. To help guide people to that system. In the meantime, systems of the interdependency and the people in them will need to survive through long years of isolation. The ideas behind the interdependency, the monopolies of the noble families and guilds, will no longer allow them to do this. Another wave of pings rang through the cathedral. And so the monopolies of the families are ended. All their trade secrets are released. We can no longer afford to have food stocks self-destruct after 5 or 6 generations, or have one family build ships. The roar, this time, was immense. It is too late, Greyland said over the din. It is done. You are still the noble families. You still have 1,000 years of wealth and capital. If you can't survive without your monopolies, then it is time you let others take your place. Eventually, the roar subsided. Finally, you have come here for a coronation. You will have one. Greyland pointed to Nadashe. But it will not be her. Not because she murdered me, among others. Not because she has been shown time and again to be a traitor to the interdependency. And not even because... And here Greyland looked at Nadashe directly. She's just not a very nice person. It's because before I died, I legally named a successor. Greyland turned to look at Proster Wu sitting in the front pew of the congregation. It is not a member of the Wu family. Twice the Wu family aligned itself with the enemies of the Emperor, with my enemies. That's 2 times too many. You will pay for your treason, Proster Wu, but so will your family. Our family. And that is on you. Proster looked away.
If not her, then who? Archbishop Cole asked. Who is to be the new emperor?
I'm glad you asked, Greyland said, and there was a final wash of pings across the devices of the cathedral. I've just sent the notice of my declaration of an heir, which I signed 3 days before my death and had witnessed by 3 others. I gave instruction for it not to be made public until the day of the coronation. You could say that I anticipated this. I, Greyland II, Emperor of the Holy Empire of the Interdependent States and Mercantile Guilds, Queen of Hub and Associated Nations, Head of the Interdependent Church, Successor to Earth and Mother to All, 88th Emperor of the House of Wu, am dead. I present to you now my heir, and the last emperor of the interdependency. The doors of the cathedral opened, and through them a figure stepped through and began walking with unhurried but deliberate pace down the nave of the cathedral. The heir to the emperor paid no attention to the rising voices that followed, keeping a steady gaze on Nadashe Nohamapitan, the pretender to the throne, whose eyes widened
as she saw who the last emperor would be. The last emperor stepped up to the chancel of the cathedral, where Nadashi no Hamapiten now stood, and stopped directly in front of her. "Bitch, you're in my spot," said Kiva Lagos.